What's up, guys? This is Jacques. Welcome back to Unpopular. I have one of my friends, one of my new friends slash listeners on today's episode, and we went through some of the latest scandalous celebrities and we played a little game of to cancel or not to cancel. She's American and she's like way more PC than me, so we had pretty different opinions on everyone, which I think made it good. You know, we like disagreed a bit and clashed a little, but in a very fun, good-natured way, no drama, which is how I think it should be. So That's a good one. And we didn't just go through like racist tweets and stuff like that. We actually did like Erica Jane, you know, with her whole scandal, Dr. Phil, Sharon Osbourne. We talked about the Teen Vogue editor. I'm sure you've heard about that story. So it's a good one. Before we get to that, let's talk about the Real Housewives of New York, because they just dropped the new season trailer. I'm sure that most of you would probably agree that New York was the best housewives show up until like Bethany and Tinsley left last season. Then it took a real nosedive. If anyone needs to go from that show, it's Sonia. I mean, how many more years can we watch the same drunken wannabe Lucille Ball antics? I cannot deal with it anymore. I've been over it for about 4 years, and somehow she keeps getting asked back every year. She was also exposed for faking storylines, by the way. I think Heather Thompson spilled that tea on her podcast, so I'm so fucking over Sonia. But the rest of them I like. I was really glad to see Dorinda get the boot because she's the devil. Anyway, look, there's 5 full-time housewives this season. We've got Ramona, Leah, Sonia, Luann, and the new girl, Ebony Williams. It's a smaller cast, but apparently that had a lot to do with COVID restrictions, because I think it's like the more people they have in a room, the more difficult it can be to like get around certain things. So they definitely kept the cast lean this year. Holla Heather Thompson is back as a friend of the show. I know some people were hoping for her to be full time, but doesn't look like it. And we have another new girl as a friend called Boshan Shaw. She is black. So is Ebony. So they've definitely listened to like some of the viewer feedback and brought in some diversity, which is good. I mean, this is like the 13th season of New York Housewives and they've never had a black housewife. So I'm glad that they're switching it up a bit. My issue with the casting is like the age gaps. I mean, it makes zero sense. Ramona is 64. Sonia is 57. Luann's 55. And then Ebony and Leah are like 37 and 38. And they're like young 37 and 38, you know? Like, I don't know. The cast members individually are all good on their own, minus Sonia. But in what world would these women actually hang out together? Never. Like, they would never, ever be in the same circles whatsoever. Like, I know that they do have to cast different types of, like, personalities for the conflict and the drama. But, like, this is absurd. Like, can you ever imagine Ramona and like Ebony, like in the same friend group? Would never happen. In the trailer, it actually looks like Ebony is going to school Ramona on a few things, because Ramona's obviously like super tone deaf. Like in one scene of the trailer, Ramona calls her kitchen staff the help and Ebony pulls her up on it. I just hope this doesn't turn into another one of those Bravo seasons where it's like the non-white cast member of the series just has to like turn into the social justice warrior and pull everybody up on their problematic behavior. You know, for one, it's getting like kind of boring at this point. And it's like not fair on the minority cast members, because then it just kind of makes them look like one dimensional and it puts this burden, I think, and responsibility on their shoulders that their castmates don't have to deal with. Like, they probably feel the pressure of the audience to be like calling this stuff out. They probably feel pressure from Bravo to do it, where it's like they have that weight on their shoulders. And then the others, like the Ramonas and the Sheps and whoever else, they just get to do like the fun, drunken stuff. So it's just, it's not fair. And, you know, Ebony seems really intelligent and opinionated. And I just want to get a full picture of her instead of like putting her in that same position that Tiffany Moon has been in over on Dallas, which Tiffany's obviously struggled with and hasn't enjoyed. So I just don't want to see the same thing for Ebony. By the way, I'm very interested to find out some more about Ebony's politics. Like, she seems to be super political. She has a political podcast and she hosts like a black news show on Revolt TV. And I thought she was going to have like pretty generic centrist democratic views, but I was looking her up and like, one, apparently she's an independent, and two, she was a Fox News personality, and honey, she was serving up some of those Republican talking points. I was checking YouTube. She was like, don't disrespect the flag. She was criticizing Hillary Clinton. Like, she was kind of going through like some of the greatest hits. Now, you guys know that I don't care about the politics of housewives. I couldn't care less if they're like Democrat or Republican or whatever. I just want to see if like the woke Roni viewers will like how they're going to treat her, because they flipped their fucking wigs when they found out that Leah McSweeney was independent with sort of somewhat nuanced political views that didn't fit into a generic box. So are they going to have a whinge about Ebony as well? I mean, I'm sure that they won't. I'm sure Ebony will get let off, and then it's like the Twitter people are going to be all on Leah's ass as usual. But whatever. Anyway, I think that Ebony has like pivoted her politics now, and she's probably a little more Bravo friendly. Like, she's in her way of thinking, she's very intelligent, and she was an attorney who moved into like broadcast and television. So obviously she really wants a media career. You know, the majority of people that work in American cable news, it doesn't matter what the network is, like, they're there to be on TV. So I'm sure that Ebony knows like how to move and where to move. Like, she knows what to do to like take her career to that next level. And I don't believe anybody's politics in cable news. Like, their political views are whatever pays the bills. So I think that Ebony knows what to say, you know, at the right time to like get where she needs to go. By the way, Bethany announced her engagement to her boyfriend the same day that the New York trailer dropped. As soon as I saw that, I knew the instant that I saw it that like she did that on purpose to get some extra publicity and probably to try and like overshadow the show a bit too, because we know that Bethany has a huge ego. Anyway, like, somebody from the show, like probably Luann or Ramona, called up Page Six, off the record, of course. Here is the quote that they gave, because they confirmed it. The quote says, "They're all confused why she's still obsessed with the Real Housewives of New York and would orchestrate her engagement news to come out the same time as the trailer for the show. Bethany is just being her petty self, but she can't take away the cast's happiness or how hard they worked this season during the coronavirus pandemic." Okay, girl. Like, the show will never be as good without Bethany. That's just the truth. We all know it. As horrible as Bethany is in real life, she's TV gold. You can't take that away from her. You cannot replace her. Like, she's one of a kind. Speaking of her, like, not being the best person in real life, the Juicy Scoop podcast this week has some good stories about Bethany being a bitch. Like, Heather McDonald spoke to a comedian who worked on Bethany's talk show, and like, she said that Bethany was just so rude and didn't say hello to her once. I think the only time like Bethany would talk to her was when she would like bark at her to do something. And Heather said that she was once talking to Bethany backstage on Chelsea Handler's show, and Bethany literally walked out of the conversation mid-sentence when she saw Chelsea pass by, because Chelsea's obviously a bigger name and a more powerful star than Heather McDonald. So as soon as Bethany saw it, it was like, bye. And she chased like Chelsea down to try and make, I don't know, a lunch date with Chelsea or something like that. So, I mean, she does seem awful, but I don't care. I love Bethany. I think she's amazing. I think she's aspirational. I think she's hilarious. I can admit she's mean, but I'm a super fan. Like, I love her when she's right, when she's wrong. Like, I'm just a stan. I don't give a shit. And you know what? I actually met Bethany in real life with another journalist here in Australia. Bethany was doing a publicity tour, I think, for Housewives of New York, and I think for something else. I can't even remember now. It was a couple of years ago. It was before the season where she fell out with Carol, because I remember vividly we were asking her about the Carol thing, and she seemed like, obviously they hadn't filmed the reunion or anything like that yet. The season hadn't officially started airing, so their friendship wasn't like completely donezo. And I remember we asked her about some comments that Carol had made about her in like Page Six, and she was like, what? Like, she seemed surprised when we brought it up to her. So I still remember that. And in person, from my experience, she was exactly how she is on TV. And she complimented our outfits when we walked in, which I think was fake, because we weren't even dressed like anything special. We were just wearing like all black, but it wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't like amazing. It was pretty basic. I think she was just being nice so we would write more positively about her, because obviously that's how Bethany's mind is working all the time. Kind of like evident of how she ditched Heather McDonald to go chase Chelsea Handler. Like, that's just how she thinks. But like, for real, I saw her joking with staff members and PR people. And when we walked in, she was doing the mention it all thing. Mention it all. because I think she was like getting it for Snapchat or Instagram. I don't know. But she was doing that and she joked with us throughout the interview. She was very professional and cool. I just loved her. She took a photo with me. So even though I believe all the mean stories about her, I can personally say that my experience with her was like 10 out of 10. It was totally like a bit of a dream come true because she's definitely one of my all-time fave housewives. So it was really cool to meet her and to like have it go well because, you know, I've met other like reality people that are like not as big as Bethany and they're horrible. But I do know people that have had bad experiences with Bethany though, like personally. So whatever, it is what it is. All right, let's get into my episode with my guest, Shira. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at UnpopularJP. Please make sure you're subscribed or following the podcast. And if you don't hate me, please leave me a review on either Apple or Podchaser. And if you'd like to support me and the show further, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/unpopularJP. Okay, let's get into it. Okay, guys, I have my friend Shira Weiss on today. She's a former Huffington Post contributor. She also writes for different newspapers and websites. She's worked in PR for 20 years, so she is perfect to break down some of these celebrity scandals with me. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to talk with you. I love listening to you, so very excited to be here.
Thanks so much for coming on. Like, you've been so supportive of my podcast, and we often discuss some of the topics, you know, from my show in the DMs, and you're way more PC than me, and you're American, so we don't always agree with things, but I think that makes it fun, right?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, yes, I am more PC than you, but I am exposed to the most offensive Americans on the planet, and every single person I went to school with is, like, awful, so, you know, you're benign compared to them.
Well, that's good to know. So look, we're going to talk about some cancel culture stuff today. I've got five public figures on the docket and we're going to decide if they deserve to be canceled or not. So just first of all, before we get into it, like, how do you define cancel culture personally? And do you even think that it exists? Because it's kind of like the word feminism where nobody can agree on what it means. So like, how do you take cancel culture? What's your thoughts?
Well, it does terrify me because I'm always worried. And, you know, Ryan Bailey actually just said the same thing. He's a podcast host. And he was saying, like, he's a little scared, like, not of cancel culture, but just like, am I going to say the wrong thing? I think everybody who is, everybody is a little bit terrified of, like, saying something that might offend a culture that is not their own. If you're a Black person, you might be, who doesn't know about Judaism, like, you might say something that you don't realize would offend a Jewish person, or you might say something that might offend an Asian person. So I think everybody is on their guard a little bit. And that is a little bit scary because I would like to be able to open the dialogue and learn from other people. So I'm not very into the whole idea of cancel culture as like cancel, cancel, cancel. I am into the idea of learning from other, just learn, you know, educating yourself. I like the idea of redemption if somebody's truly going to improve themselves. So I'm not totally for cancel culture.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel kind of like that. Like, I mean, I'm not against, like, giving people backlash. Like, even when I think something's overblown, I'm like, really? I'm like, okay, fair enough. You know, you're in the public eye. You're going to cop some backlash for some things. For me, I define cancel culture when it comes to the point of people calling for you to lose your job and, you know, in your career and everything, and especially when it's over something that's, like, really quite small. Like, it's something that, yeah, maybe you should be criticized for, maybe you should learn and kind of, like, adjust your behavior a little bit, but when it comes for people, like, calling for people's jobs and everything over, you know, old tweets and stuff, that's what I think it goes totally out of control. So let's just start with an easy one. Sharon Osbourne. All I can say is thank God I didn't jump on the podcast with a hot take defending her right off the bat, because originally I was on her side when this very first started. And I was going to come in here and I was going to be all team Sharon. And then more stuff has come out. Now I'm definitely actually not team Sharon. So let me just go right to the start of this. All right. So This began on an episode of The Talk when Cheryl Underwood, who was black, questioned Sharon for defending Piers Morgan during his whole row with, like, Meghan Markle. So Cheryl said that Sharon was giving validation or a safe haven to Piers's racist actions, and Sharon flipped her lid. Like, Cheryl was very calm. Sharon flipped out. I was on Sharon's side for this part, honestly, because what Cheryl was doing, in my opinion, whether she meant it or not, it was guilt by association. You know, I don't think that Piers's beef with Meghan is about race. I'm not saying that there isn't a racial element to, you know, backlash against Meghan. People have come up with, like, examples in the media and headlines of double standards and stuff. But I'm just, Piers specifically, I feel like at this point we've seen that Piers's thing with Meghan is more driven with her rejecting him and ghosting him. He's like the man scorned. Yeah. And then I think there's another part. Yeah, big time. And there's this other part of it as well that's like a publicity stunt. He knows that he's playing to that audience and it gives him a lot of headlines and stuff. So I don't think that his issue with Meghan Markle is about race. And I feel like British people, so Sharon, are kind of fed up that, like, Americans are kind of projecting their stuff onto this situation about everything. Like, I think British people feel a bit like we can't criticize Meghan Markle or comment on this royal family situation whatsoever without Americans calling us racist. And I think that's what triggered Sharon. So I was on Sharon's side at this point, ready to defend her. But after that, the floodgates opened. So first, Holly Robinson-Pete, who was on The Talk originally, she came out. She said that Karen had called her ghetto. Then Sharon fired back with some email receipts that kind of gave the impression that she had a good relationship with Holly. But from there, then this journalist, Yasha Ali, I follow him on Twitter. He follows me. He's a good journalist. He does a lot of good work. He's a pretty big name. He dropped this Sharon Osbourne expose with like 11 different sources, including Leah Remini, who was on the record, and it was like pretty damning. So the article alleged that Sharon called Julie Chen wanton and slanty eyes, and that she made comments about Sarah Gilbert, who is a lesbian, calling her a pussy licker.
Oh my God.
I can't. Yeah. I mean, I kind of think the pussy liquor thing's funny, but not the other thing, of course. I think it's horrible. Besides that, the article just had like multiple examples of like bullying behavior from Sharon, like just over the years. And it painted a really negative picture of her. And I believe every word of it, from the bullying to the racist comments to the pussy liquor. You know, Yasha Ali is pretty credible. He does get into the cancel culture stuff too much sometimes. Like, sometimes I'll see him doing threads on people and digging up their tweets and stuff. I think, really, dude? But I think that this was, he's done a really good job on this. Like, how are you feeling about Sharon? Like, do you believe what's in the article? Like, I do.
Here's the thing. Sharon's from another, I mean, we discussed this a little bit offline. She's from a different generation. And, like, my grandmother would say things and it was like, ha, 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 you know, funny, but now it's like, oh my God, that was racist. So Sharon like toes the line, and she was always, I mean, if you watch the Osbourne, she always said risque things. And I mean, even her, you know, her daughter said something on Fashion Police and got in trouble, you know, with the I think Juliana Rancic had said, oh, it was about Trump not wanting to Mexicans
in the toilets.
Yeah.
And on The View, which I rewatched that. Sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, before we recorded this, I rewatched that clip. My body shuddered from the cringe. Like, she was trying to have a go at Trump. And then she's like, Trump, if you deport all the Mexicans, who's going to clean your toilet? Because obviously that's how she, I mean, they're very, you know, privileged family anyway.
Yeah, that whole family is unfiltered. And so Sharon is this unfiltered woman in she's 70 or in her late 60s. And it's a certain generation. And unfortunately, I think she's like aging out of what we can watch on TV because she's very un-PC. You know, she could start her own podcast, Unpopular 2.0, because her takes are she says some very offensive things. And here's the thing. When she was defending Piers, she made it very personal. Like, she could have just said, you know, Piers is my friend. I disagree with what he said. It's horrible. The racism that Meghan Markle endured, you know, like, let's believe her account. You know, I mean, you know, whether you believe her or not, I don't think it's a good look to say, I don't believe someone who's telling me that they're suicidal, that they were, you know, that they incurred racism from the royal family. I think Sharon could have validated Meghan while at the same time said that Piers, you know, he's my friend, but I disagree with him. But she didn't do that.
But maybe she does agree with, like, do we all have to agree with Meghan Markle? Like, I'm kind of in the middle with this Meghan Markle thing. You know, I don't love her. I don't hate her. But I feel some of the British people's frust, like, I don't feel it, but I can see why some of them would be frustrated, because they do have this whole history with the monarchy and this sort of knowledge of it that Americans don't have. And it does feel that they're not allowed to have any kind of negative opinion on Meghan Markle, because they do get slammed as racist. Like, that's why I feel like Sharon was so defensive, because it's like, this actually isn't about race. Yeah, and you're inferring that I am racist. Like, that's what I feel like Cheryl was doing. And I don't know if Cheryl meant to do it. Like, she seems, I'm not familiar with the talk really, but Cheryl seems like, you know, a lovely person. I'm sure she wouldn't do it on purpose. But the way that she worded that comment, it was a guilt by association.
I don't think it was worded well, but I think what she was trying to say was that, Sharon, by defending Piers, you're discounting what Meghan said about feeling suicidal. You're discounting what she said about, you know, how they question how dark Archie was going to be. You're discounting, you know, real pain that this woman showed on TV. Let's believe her. I mean, if we find out, like, that, you know, I mean, I believe Meghan, but let's say, you know, even if it, let's say, you know, there are people that don't believe her, or let's say it ends up not being true. I mean, I believe her, just, I don't want your audience to, you know, throw bananas at me. But I just, in either case, here's a woman on TV being vulnerable, telling you about things that people don't, you know how hard it is to open up. If the problem with Sharon is that then she turned to Cheryl and said, don't you cry. You know, this is, I should be the one crying. She turned herself into the victim, and that was a bad look. She was saying to Cheryl, like, don't you cry that we're having this, like, argument. You know, I'm the one who's being accused of being a racist. And the whole victim, you know, painting herself as a victim, that's what didn't go over well with the audience. And then launched, you know, then we started looking at past things that Sharon said, calling people ghetto, making other weird comments on the show. And she has a history of that. I mean, I don't know if you watched Meghan. Meghan Wants to Be a Millionaire. That show years ago.
When she attacked her, she attacked Meghan on stage.
Yeah, so Meghan was in charm school, I believe, and they didn't show this, but I don't know what they showed, but Sharon physically attacked Meghan, and Meghan brought a lawsuit against her. She's been problematic for years, so is this really any surprise?
Yasha Ali's article also had a incident where Sharon assaulted some woman at, like, a restaurant. And yeah, I mean, I agree with you for the most part. I was still on Sharon's side originally with that thing on the talk, honestly, but past that, no, the past behavior, obviously, you know, I don't condone it. We do like Sharon because she's not PC, and she does say those outrageous things, and it's fun. But look, if you're caught saying racist comments, you know, calling people pussy lickers and stuff at work, the whole thing, assaulting people, and it's like it's a bullying behavior. These things are adding up on each other. It's gone on for years. It is what it is. Like, the network can't be seen to endorse that. Like, someone said to me when I was talking to someone about it, I go, oh, do you believe the stuff about Sharon Osbourne? Because I said, I believe it all. And someone said, oh, big deal. She made some off-color remarks, you know, at work to friends, you know, behind their back. Who cares? And it's like, well, if you're going to take the risk of, you know, making these comments at work, then you have to, like, accept the consequences if it comes out. It is what it is. Like, that network can't be seen to be endorsing someone that's calling people, like, slanty eyes and bullying making all
the
these comments.
On slanty eyes. Yeah, that.
Yeah, it's so bad. But look, all right, are we canceling Sharon? My vote is yes.
Yeah, I don't think she can come. So I think she's not going to be coming back, and they're going to be replacing her with someone. I hate to say this, but they'll probably replace her with someone younger and more progressive, or at least someone more progressive.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think, though, like, I mean, Sharon is a tough cookie. Like, she's not going down without a fight. I wouldn't be surprised if she... We could see her, like, working with Piers or something in the future. I think there's a very lucrative market in that kind of, like, anti-PC kind of space. You know, Piers Morgan, I think, is about to sign a deal with that conservative network in Britain. I don't know, maybe Sharon will pop up on there doing an entertainment show that's not PC. I mean, I'm sure she has a future in media. She still is going to have a following. I think there's a lot of people that are still going to be supporting her. And look, you guys know that I don't have any problem defending someone, you know, problematic if I think that it's unjust, but I just feel like with everything against Sharon, with all the comments, with the years of bullying, with how long this goes back, you know, cancel her. Goodbye, Sharon. Okay, next up is Dr. Phil. So this one's kind of funny. BuzzFeed ran this article recently titled, "It's Time to Cancel Dr. Phil." And, you know, I sort of rolled my eyes at it at first because, you know, they said that his show is exploitive and takes advantage of vulnerable people for trash TV entertainment. And I'm like, yeah, that's why we watch it. Like, that's the whole point. That's why I like this show. But they've, you know, they used an example of this drunk woman that he had on the show, and she was like confused and out of it, and it was in really poor taste. You know, he definitely did not seem to be trying to help this person. It was like, let's make a spectacle of her, which the show really is. It's like, let's take vulnerable people in, you know, that have mental health issues and stuff, well, and like wheel them out like it's the circus. Yeah, that's Dr. Phil. And, you know, at first I was sort of towing the line a bit because I was like, look, we watch this for the freak show. That's why we enjoy it. Let's not pretend that, you know, we're above it. We've all sat back and like watched a Dr. Phil episode here and there. We've all sat on YouTube and like watched some of the clips of the crazies and laughed at home.
I've been,
you know,
in the studio,
we're not all above it.
So.
Yes, well, I'm going to get to that because I know you have a Dr. Phil story, but like this has gotten like worse because now Bad Baby, probably the most famous Dr. Phil star of all time, the Cash Me Outside girl, she just came out and she has said that the ranch for troubled youth that the Dr. Phil show sent her on, like, because after her episode, she was like the troubled teen gone wild. They sent her off to this youth re-education camp or something to, you know, straighten her out. She's come out now and she's saying that it was abusive. She's, you know, done a tell-all about it and had there's some damning allegations in there. And it's quite similar to Paris Hilton's documentary that came out where Paris Hilton opened up about her being in this, you know, sort of military-style disciplinarian school. Bad Baby's story is not as bad as the Paris Hilton one, but it's still like when you add these things up, then it gets to the point of like, okay, like is Dr. Phil kind of like putting people in danger? So, I mean, how do you feel about Dr. Phil?
First of all, I don't know how credible that Cash Me Outside girl is because she seemed a little crazy. I didn't watch the episode, but I saw like clips. So are we going to take her as a reliable source? But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you think of her. I don't know enough.
I'm actually a fan of hers. I think she's a fun personality because I like people that are controversial and that people hate, so I enjoy
you find her.
Her
to be credible. I don't know,
you know what, I actually do, and I've followed her on and off for a few years, and I've seen things where she's referred to that time at the ranch in a way that has indicated that there's been like trauma connected to it and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah. So
I actually believe it. And I'll just add that I was going through some of her videos just the other day when all of this came out, and I was watching one of those boring videos that they do where it's the YouTubers all do them where it's like boyfriend tag, like guess what my favorite food is and stuff like that. And she has her best friend and her boyfriend there and they have to like guess things about her. And she said this was filmed before she had come out with this thing about this troubled youth ranch that she was sent to. And she said something about, do I have any scars? And the friend, she actually meant physical scars, but the friend got confused and thought she meant emotional scars. And the friend was like, oh, the ranch, like referring to. So she'd obviously opened up about it to her friend. So, yeah, I do believe Bad Baby.
Okay, so I apologize to your listeners because I'm not so well versed in her. So now, I mean, I do believe.
Yeah, it's all good.
I believe the victims. I will say this. Okay, so I've met Dr. Phil. I actually pitched the whole idea to the producers of the Dr. Phil show. And they were like, we love this idea. We're going to do it. My client was, he's the king of the infomercial. He's like the guy who came up with the idea for the infomercials. He did OxyClean and all those, you know, I don't know if you have those in Australia. But I had him on judging inventions on Dr. Phil's show. And Dr. Phil was kind of rude to some of like the inventors who were a little wacky. And he runs the show like a business. He was totally businesslike. He wasn't warm. He was just like, hello, okay, go here, go here, go ahead. It was totally business, no warmth. Even my client said to me, like, wow, he's just like all business, not a nice guy. At the end of the show, at the end of the taping, he walks out with his wife. It's like, it's sort of like, I'm not joking. It's sort of like it was acted out and scripted. He takes her hand, they walk out, and then they go on to taping in the next show. So it was super, super business. And I was like, I came out of there feeling like, this is a business. This is not a warm, fuzzy psychiatrist who cares. But then years later, like a couple years later, I contacted his PR agent and I said, I want to do an article about bullying and I want to get tips from Dr. Phil because, you know, Dr. Phil's a great talker. He has great talking points. And he called me right on the dot. He's also very businesslike. Like he called me exactly on time from a non-identifiable number. And was very businesslike and very good. And I got great quotes from him. And I just think he's a businessman. And, you know, Dr. Oz has been under a lot of scrutiny because he was pushing hydroxychloroquine, which is not a remedy for COVID. So Oprah is connected to a lot of charlatans. And, you know, there are problems with Dr. Phil. He's not a warm, fuzzy guy, so I can see him sending somebody to a Paris Hilton-like ranch. I don't know about cancellation, though, because he has helped a lot of people out.
Yeah, that's a good point. As exploitive as the show is, like, there's got to be a bunch of people in there that he has actually helped, for sure. Yeah, look, as far as cancelling Dr. Phil, I don't know. I do enjoy the show. It's trash TV. I would say cancelling Dr. Phil, I'm going to put a pending on that one. Look, if someone investigates that he's been sending, you know, people like Bad Baby into abusive situations and it's happening multiple times, I say get rid of it. Until then, am I still going to keep watching the hot mess Dr. Phil clips on YouTube? Yes, I am. So it is what it is.
I want to add, I say not cancel him because I don't think he's a malicious guy. He wants to do good, even though it's all a business. Like, he's not warm and fuzzy, but he has done good things. He has helped people out. He has gotten junkies off the street. I've watched enough of his shows to see the updates and the people who improve their lives and the people who improve their marriages. Like, I remember following this one lady who, like, you know, he followed up with the family and repairing the family. He's immersed in so many things, you know, even if it's business, he's immersed in helping so many people that, you know, so 3, 4, 5 people have had bad experiences. I mean, probably more people have had bad experiences with him. But for all those people, there are so many people that he's helped, even if he takes a business-like approach. So, no, don't cancel him.
All right. So, this next one, this is Alexi I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Alexi McCammond. McCammond, yeah. She is a 27-year-old African-American Teen Vogue editor, well, almost Teen Vogue editor, who was fired for her bad tweets. Now, this story is a little complicated, so let me just go through the points here, okay? So, Alexi was a political reporter for Axios. I think she covered like Joe Biden and, you know, Democratic politics. 2 years ago, some of her tweets resurfaced that she had made when she was 17 years old. They were kind of racist against Asians. She had some supposedly homophobic tweets, which I'm going to get to because I don't actually think they were homophobic, but she had some bad tweets from 17 years old. Now, she apologized at the time. This is 2 years ago. She took ownership of them and everything, felt like she kind of cleared that up. And then fast forward to today, she was hired by Anna Wintour to be the new editor-in-chief of Teen Vogue. When she was hired, a bunch of these like woke Teen Vogue staffers got together. I think there was about like 20 of them. And they recirculated the tweets and they kind of kicked off this campaign to have her fired. Now, she apologized again, both publicly and privately. She even met with like various staff members at the company to address it face to face. So she's addressing it head on. Teen Vogue was trying to stand by her, actually. So when this is first happening, Teen Vogue are actually still backing her and they're still going ahead with, you know, putting her in as the editor-in-chief. And then some advertisers started to drop out, which, that's when it gets really bad because, you know, people respond to money. So some advertisers dropped out, and then the opposition to Alexei got even worse after the Atlanta shooting, because that obviously put on like this increased focus on, you know, Asian American racism. And, you know, we've all seen the like Stop Asian Hate hashtag. So could not be have been worse timing for her tweets and that to happen. And once that happened, you know, like some other stuff came out as well. Somebody found a photo of her in like a Native American headdress, again from when 2011, so 2011 when she was 17 years old. Eventually the pressure was too much. They had to fire her. And, you know, what's interesting about this as well is that, like, Teen Vogue were aware of the tweets when they hired her. Like, she actually addressed them during the hiring process, so they weren't blindsided. And there has actually been a lot of backlash to this firing. So a lot of people are actually taking Alexei's side, which usually I think we see in the mainstream when people get cancelled. It's usually kind of, you sort of have a majority, at least in the sphere of the mainstream media, that are kind of, you know, they support the person being cancelled. But I feel like there's a lot of people that are actually kind of like taking her side. So, All right, we've covered that. How do you feel about Alexei?
Well, there's more to that, okay. Because there's a senior staff member who's Asian, I believe, half Filipino, half, I'm not sure her ethnicity. And years ago, she tweeted to a friend, "Hey, N-word." And she was the one that was pushing for Alexei's firing.
I know, I saw that. And I think that she had a few times of using the N-word. She wasn't using the N-word in like a, you know, malicious manner. Is using that word in any context, I think that's worse than what Alexei's tweets were, because of obviously the historical context, like attached to the word and everything. And, you know, isn't it funny that this, you know, this Filipino, she's trying to cancel Alexei, who's black, for using anti, you know, Asian stuff. And then she's used anti-black stuff. And it's like these two are canceling each other out. And again, this is this hypocrisy that we've seen with like Taylor Nolan on The Bachelor. She comes after these people. She's like, cancel Rachel Kirkconnell, cancel Chris Harrison. And then we find her tweets and they're like worse than anything Rachel and Chris Harrison did. So that is always interesting to me when we see that these, you know, these cancel culture wokies are like total hypocrites.
I'll tell you my thoughts. Like, there's a paradox going on. The younger generation, that generation, like people in their 20s, the millennials, I think Alexei's like 27. It's interesting to me because my son, when he was in public school, he said, you know, all the kids just say, "Hey, N-word" to each other, just like for fun. And I was like, "Really? Are you serious?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, they all use it." And I said, "No, that can't be." And he said, "Yeah." So there's a generational thing for sure where people are just tossing out these words. And like we, you know, we're in the media, whatever, we're like horrified by it. So I think there's that going on. But at the same time, that generation should be woke enough to be like, "Hey, we have Twitter, we have social media, we get in trouble." Because I look at it as, you know, I'm 46 years old. I don't mind sharing my age. I thank God, you know, there was no Twitter around. But I have to say, the way my parents raised me, I never said anything negative ever about any other ethnicities, because I, you know, I knew, even though I went to Jewish school, I had a black, it wasn't as so common, but like there was a black Jewish girl in my class, and I knew Asian Jews, and we were always taught to be like, people are people, and, you know, you just don't act that way. So I think it's just, there's a generational thing with people just tossing things out, you know, for shock value. And I think that that's what happened with Alexei. And I think that's what happened with this senior editor who's being a hypocrite right now. And I think that they could go and join the Morning Toast and All Star Network. You know, I'm sorry, but I, as a kid, never said things like that. Thank God Twitter wasn't around, because I know people who did say things like that. But if you say things like that, like, what, how are you being raised? I mean, I think the N-word thing, according to what my son told me, it's just kind of like this thing, they all tease each other and it's not a big deal. And that's,
well, they listen to like rap music and stuff, and then they don't. I guess when you're that age, not that, look, the N-word wasn't really a thing in Australia, because obviously we have a different kind of history. So we, you know, people wouldn't have said it anyway, but I'm sure that there were like things that, like, I don't know, some kind of like Australian equivalents that were said when you're a kid growing up in the schoolyard, and kids, you know, kids push boundaries. They say things that, you know they're not allowed to. It's sort of like being rebellious and growing up. Not that it's okay, but it's like kids say stupid shit. Like, their brains aren't fucking developed at that age. Like you said, your son says that kids are saying it.
Yeah,
around,
my son,
you know,
didn't, for the record.
Yeah, I know. For the record, yeah your son did not.
Yeah, because my
kids.
Son is quiet. But I asked him. I said, you know, were these black kids that were saying? He goes, yeah, everybody. So it wasn't a big deal, and it wasn't a thing that people were shamed for. And I think that these 27-year-olds are kind of, you know, my son's 18 now. So these kids, you know, this girl's not even 10 years older than my son, this Alexi woman. So, I mean, I could be her mother. That's, like, scary. Anyway, the point is, you know, I find it horrifying, but it's a generational thing, and there are generational paradoxes. And I think that Teen Vogue has to make the decision that, I mean, she resigned, which I think was a good move. I think she should...
Well, forced to resign, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't think anyone's going to ever live it down, because one of those polarizing things. Yeah, I mean, I saw, like, people defending her and saying, you know, you should be forgive. I do believe in redemption, but at the same time, if you're an editor and you're making those odd statements online, it's just, as a writer... You know, I'll give you an example. I once wrote, and I'll just tell you really quickly, I once wrote this headline, and it was totally different than what the Huffington Post edited. I wrote about the movie Get Out, and I reviewed it, and the Huffington Post changed my headline to say, as a white woman, and then I had all these people sending me horrible, horrible emails threatening my life, saying, like, you're a racist, you wrote as a white woman, and I go, that wasn't my headline. Huffington Post changed my headline. So, I mean, okay, that was an example of, like, you know, some, you know, an editor, like, making me look like a fool. But, and then, you know, what can you even, you know, you have to even take ownership for that. Like, maybe I shouldn't have reviewed the movie Get Out. Like, it's so, that's the scary, like you asked me at the beginning, that's the scary thing with cancel culture. It's like, you don't even want to, you know, I was talking to a podcast host, and she said, I don't want to review Real Housewives of Atlanta, because I'm a white woman, like, and I don't want to get in trouble commenting on the culture.
I've been through that with when I, during the Beverly Hills, I said that I took Kyle's side over Garcelle, and then I had people calling me racist and said, oh, we know why you don't like Garcelle. It's like, no, they're having a petty spat like all housewives do, and I just felt Kyle was in the right in this situation, and people do take it to that next level. It's like insanity. But that's why I think we need to push back against this, because, like, if you're under 18 and you commit, like, a crime or something, I don't know, you steal candy from the shop or whatever, that's not on your, like, criminal record when you're an adult. So why should some offensive, like, tweets or comments you made, like, as a teenager follow you into adult life, like, 10 years later, and you lose a job? And also, I just want to add, like, if I want to look at this from, like, the woke perspective, they've gone and denied, like, a young black woman a position as an editor of a major magazine. And, you know, I hear a lot about, like, you know, black faces in high places, and we need representation in the media and how important it is. And it's like, well, now you guys have robbed that. And I'm sure that she would have done a lot of kind of, like, progressive, you know, social justice, woke kind of stuff in Teen Vogue. Like, that's what Teen Vogue is now. So I don't think that, like, removing her is, like, even helping their cause that they're, like, passionate about.
Yeah, I think that at some point someone needs to put together a doctrine of, like, this is what we're going to do from now on, because there are no rules right now, so we're just shooting from the hip. But I have to say this. I think that if you talked that way as a kid, it's abominable. I never spoke that way as a kid. I know, you know, kids say stupid things, but I sound sanctimonious, but I wasn't.
It's fine.
I wasn't raised.
Do your PC thing.
I wasn't raised. I don't know. I just, like, my parents were just really about equality. And, you know, I remember kids on the playground saying things like, you know, saying things that were not PC. I'm not going to repeat them. But, like, you know, I went to an all-Jewish school. So, of course, like, you know, diversity wasn't something that was seen. But I remember people saying these things. And, like, you didn't think twice about, like, little nursery rhymes And now it's like, I mean, if you imagine if you had tweeted those things, I was actually like a quiet kid. I didn't partake in that stuff. But now I'm like, holy cow, the things we said back in 1984. So, you know, in a way, it's easy for me to talk because there wasn't Twitter, you know, I didn't even discover the internet until I was in college. But I think like maybe we need to put together a doctrine of, you know, what the rules are going to be for people who did things when they were younger, tweeted things 10 years ago. You know, it's funny because when I applied for my first job, there was no Twitter. So, you know, nobody could look that stuff up. And I'm sure that like people won't hire me because they're like, oh, she wrote about housewives. You know, you can get canceled for a lot of things or discriminate.
You could have like, you, I mean, I'm sure that you never said like racist things and stuff, but I'm sure you must have like said or did, like everyone at some point has like done things that, you know, especially in their youth, like we're crazy when we're teenagers. Like I did some like crazy stuff. Like one of the things as well, by the way, that what they said were homophobic tweets was her just going, oh, that's gay, like saying stuff like that. Oh, that's gay. That's how every single teenager talked like 10 years ago. I'm gay. And in high school, we would say like, oh, that's gay. That's gay. Like I said it. We all said it. It's like nothing. And then now they're applying like that's homophobic to her, which is crazy. Like this is one of those cases that I just think is so extreme and like so ridiculous just with the things she said, with, you know, the age of it, with the fact that she's taken ownership of it, because that's like a lot of these, you know, the woke people, they go like, you know, you need to apologize. You need to own it. It's like, well, she did fucking own it like 2 years ago and now you've like, and she atoned for it and she like went through it then and now you've like recirculated it. And I just think this one is just insane. And I think who the hell are these people that have gone out of their way to start this campaign against her, to, you know, to have a fight, especially when they've got their own bad tweets, as it is. We've already seen the Filipino girl that was using the N-word. So they have their own bad tweets. I don't know who they think they are to have, you know, the authority. It's a bit like I saw a comment, I don't know if it was in The Hill or something, that the inmates are running the asylum, which is a bit like with this at Teen Vogue, you would think that it should be the, you know, the Anna Wintour and stuff making the decisions or whatever, the board, whoever. But instead you've got these writers that are like banding together. I just think this one is fucking nuts. And this is why I do push back on the cancel culture stuff. It's not like I'm just out here trying to defend, you know, racist white people. I'm sure some people would try to like put that tag on me, but it's just like there's no end to it, because once you start it at a certain level, now we're getting to the point where now this young black woman who would have had an influential position that would have been important, that would have furthered diversity and all of the things that the woke people like, now she's out of a job. So I definitely don't think she should be cancelled. Although, another thing I will add, I haven't seen her previous articles, so I can't say, but I assume that writing, I mean, some of the work that she's, the places that she's worked before and being in Teen Vogue, I wouldn't be surprised if she is maybe part of this culture, this woke culture that pushes a lot of this stuff. And
yeah, sometimes I think when representing herself.
Well, it's a bit like, it's not that she's misrepresenting, it's just that like they eat their own, you know? It's like you promulgate this culture and now it's like come to get you. That's why I don't play that game. Like, you know, I don't want to be Taylor Nolan. Like people can say that I'm problematic. I don't want to be out here preaching this and that. And then, you know, I said something bad on Facebook like 10 years ago.
So. You know what I think it is though? My last word on this is that, okay, at my age and being a Gen Xer, I know we said, you know, oh, that looks so gay about like our outfits or whatever. And, you know, it is not acceptable now. I apologize that we ever talked that way, but that was the way we all talked. And, you know, like I remember like in the playground, you know, in kindergarten, kids did like slanty eyes. I'm, you know, Chinese, whatever. And it was not, it was just like a thing kids did in the 80s, which is pretty bad, but there was no Twitter, there was no video of us doing it. You know, I don't, you know, I can't remember like myself doing it, but I remember seeing other kids doing crazy things. And it was just a thing that was said. And okay, I can understand the 80s, but these people are 20 freaking 7 years old. I think to me, I feel like they should have progressed to the point where they weren't talking like we were in the 80s. That's what
I feel. Well, look, yeah, look, we disagree on this one. I think I'm all for her. You are kind of with them a bit. All right, so our last one, and I'm going to need you to explain this one to me because I'm actually not fully across this like you are. So Erica Jane from The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, she's in a real pickle because her husband, Tom Girardi, he's the high-powered attorney that most famously worked on the Erin Brockovich case, the real one. It's not just a Julia Roberts movie. And he's been busted, like, embezzling money. It's some crazy shit. I guess, look, there's a lot to this, and I guess we're looking at what was Erica's involvement. Is she responsible for what Tom did? Did she do some stuff? Is she just being judged for a man's crimes? Like, can you just break this down a little bit?
Okay, so here's the thing. If Erica had come out with a statement initially saying, look, I wasn't complicit, I was completely in the dark, we led separate lives in this regard, and he didn't talk to me about his business dealings, but I am so sorry to the burn victims. I am so sorry to the victims of the Lion Air crash.
Well, can you just explain a bit about the air crash, about Tom did, for people that aren't across that?
Okay, sure. So he handled the cases of people who lost family members. There were some Boeing air crashes, Lion Air, I believe it was called, and the families of people who perished, you know, orphans, widows, you know, people who were completely destitute, you know, won a huge settlement and they were supposed to get the money. And then there were PENG victims. I'm saying it wrong. Pacific Gas and Electric victims. They were supposed to get money because, you know, there was like a gas leak in their town. It was causing cancer. That was in the movie Erin Brockovich. All these people were supposed to get money from Tom. But what Tom ended up doing was he spent money to fund Erica's lifestyle. He also used the money to pay other clients. So it became a Ponzi scheme where he owed this client money. So he ended up taking money from this fund, you know, what they call misappropriating funds. So Jay Edelson, who was initially working with him, compensate the Lion Air crash victims' families, started to discover that these people weren't getting, you know, he was getting complaints, they weren't getting paid back. And he, you know, did the discovery, looked into it, and found out that Tom was running this huge Ponzi scheme. He was also putting money into EJ Global, which is Erica's company, her glam, her entertainment, her, middle-aged pop star career. Erica's claim, and I have intel behind the scenes because I'm friends with Sutton's best friends. Erica's claim is that she was blindsided and she didn't know anything, but she's listed as the secretary on EJ Global and knows of the money that Tom put into it. She had to have known something. She's going to say next season that she was completely blindsided. She's going to say that Tom had an affair, and she already put that out on Instagram. Sutton is going to be like us, who reads and questions and says, but how could you not have known? You were listed as the secretary on his company. How could you have not known when blah, 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 blah? Like, Sutton is, I mean, she's smarter than the rest of us.
People are going to love Sutton.
Yeah. So apparently Sutton, I thought Garcelle also was with Sutton. I know Garcelle and Sutton became very close this season. So initially I understood that Garcelle and Sutton were asking questions, but Hollywood Life, I believe it's called, I spoke to this guy, Charles Rogers. He did an article and he said that the scoop he got was that it was Sutton. I got the Sutton stuff, but I assumed that Garcelle was in with it. But I think it's really Sutton that asked the most questions. And so anyway, Jay Edelson, I've spoken to. He's joined my clubhouses. He's a big reality TV fan in his free time, which is kind of funny because he's a serious lawyer. But he's working really hard to bring this case against Tom. And now Tom is claiming that, Tom's team is saying he has Alzheimer's, which could be possible. He's elderly. But just a few months ago, he did a very good interview where he was really on the ball. So, you know, his credibility has been undermined a bit with that. His brother took over as his conservator, and now the Bar Association, which was kind of fooled by Tom, is launching an investigation into, does he really have Alzheimer's or is he scamming them?
Could Erica have, like, she's getting this money from him. Obviously, she's got to know money's coming in, but would she just assume that, look, he's a rich guy, he does all these big cases. You know, she is not thinking to herself, oh, this money's coming from, you know, burn victims that have been robbed of their settlement. I mean, could that be the case?
Yeah, you know, my take is, so I know a lot of people are not going to agree with me, but I think Erica and Tom were living totally separate lives in that regard. I think he kept his business separate from her, and they had like an arrangement where he was sort of like her sugar daddy, took care of her. She just wanted, you know, she never had a father. She wanted a father figure. I don't think it was, okay, I'm speculating. I don't think it was like a sexual relationship, at least later on. And I think he totally kept her in the dark. Kate Casey disagrees with me and says that Erica's very smart and she knows what's going on. But I don't think Erica looked deep enough. I think she was focused on herself. She's so self-absorbed. Now, the issue, I did a Clubhouse on Erica's social media because her social media is like, you cunts, you're all so gullible. You know, she's trolling all of us. And I spoke to a crisis communications manager and she was like, Erica's trying to get attention for the show. That's what she's doing. She's being the... she's being Erica Jane, the entertainer, whereas she should have just put out one initial statement at the beginning saying, look, I got to make a show. This is my bread and butter. Maybe she didn't need to say that, but this is her bread and butter. Her assets were frozen. Look, guys, I'm going to be entertaining on social media, but I want to say I'm so sorry for the victims. It's been brought to my attention, and I realize now she's never said that, and so it looks bad for her. And I'll just read quickly that Jay Edelson sent me an email. He said, the one thing I keep in mind is that anyone can say anything when they are on a reality TV show, and Erica in particular has made a career out of creating a persona. These are very significant allegations she's been accused of. At some point, she'll have to respond in court, and that's when the truth will come out. Until then, she appears like she just views this as publicity and is using it to get more airtime for the upcoming season. I've seen reality stars do this under similar circumstances, and it's a very tough tightrope to walk. It's so easy to say or do things that will get her in even more legal trouble.
I was thinking that maybe, I mean, I agree that she should have put out a statement like going, you know, this is horrifying. I had nothing to do with this. But look, the level of like legalities and stuff around this and, you know, how serious this case is, she could have had a lawyer saying, no, do not put any statement out addressing it. These are the things that you're allowed to say on the show. She would have been prepped by her lawyer of what she can and can't say, I'm sure. And then just like wait for the court case. But I mean, I don't have a lot of sympathy for her. I agree with you that she would, I mean, as if she knew that the money was coming from like burn victims. I do not believe that. I don't know. If someone has some evidence that she knew, feel free to send it over to me. But I don't have a lot of sympathy for her because so much has come out that she's just an awful person. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just a bitch. Like, so many eyewitness accounts of people that have worked with her. I was always a big Erica Jane fan, and I feel like I was wrong to be a fan of her now knowing
me too
how horrible she was. And I usually feel like I'm a pretty good judge of, like, because I do go against the grain with a lot of the housewives I like, and I feel like I am usually a good judge of character with things, and sometimes people are sort of unfairly maligned or there's, you know, more to the story. But I was one of those big Erica fans in the beginning, and now I've just heard so much about how horrible she was. I was talking to someone not that long ago that was friends with one of the Beverly Hills editors, and he said that, like, Erica is just, like, on set, she's just the, like, absolute worst, like, to a level that it's, like, comical, like, what a bitch she is. So
I'll just tell you, I once interviewed her for the Huffington Post, and she was so sweet, and she was like, honey, and sweetie, and darling. And then I went looking for that recently. I was like, hey, I wonder where that is. Like, the Huffington Post, my Huffington Post blogs are not archived well, but I find every single one of my articles. That one is missing. I think she had a team scrub certain articles from the internet. Maybe there was something incriminating.
Yeah, I could totally see that. So, I don't know. I'm excited for the new season of Beverly Hills. That sounds juicy with Sutton. Do we think that she is going to be upgraded to full-time with all this?
I hope so, because I heard that, I mean, all the interviews say that Sutton brings the most trouble because Sutton is just doing the reading. You know, my friend Tanya told me that, like, Sutton in the beginning was very sympathetic to Erica and listened to her. But then she started doing what we're doing, which is reading the articles, reading the LA Times, and then looking into things. And she had questions. So we're all Sutton.
Totally. All right. So, like, do you think Erica should be cancelled, or do you think it's a bit... she's a bitch, but she didn't know specifically that she's, like, milking money from burn victims.
Well, this is terrible to say, but if she is going to talk this season, then we have a great season that I'm looking forward to. As terrible... You know, I feel terrible about the victims. Like, Jay Edelson keeps stressing to me, like, think about the victims. Like, these are people, you know, but he also likes reality TV. So, like, it's a guilty pleasure for all of us. Of course, I'm more excited about this season than seasons past. I hate, you know, the show for a while was, like, stagnating. And finally, and you know, remember last year how everybody was like, Erica should not be full-time because she has no storyline before all this broke? Now, Erica has the, I mean, this is like the biggest scandal. Erica has the storyline. So,
yeah,
no, don't cancel her. Bring her on. Yeah. Have her talk.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love Beverly Hills. I mean, the last few seasons I've really, you know, my problem with the show was Lisa Vanderpump. Once I got rid of her, I've been like loving it. So I cannot wait. So look, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been so much fun. Let everyone know where they can follow you on social media and check out your work and your Clubhouse because you're very active everywhere.
Okay, so if you Google Shira Hirschman Weiss, some of my articles pop up. Follow me on Instagram. I'm Shira Weiss 2.0, and I'll let people know when I have articles out. And I'm on Clubhouse, Shira Weiss. I've been on there a lot.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.